This is Donald Hossig with Cancer Action News Network. You are listening to Loving the Earth Environmental Revolution. Joining us this morning is Dr. Peter Orris. He is an MD and a MPH. Good morning, Dr. Orris.
Good morning.
I first encountered you, your name, of not you, but your name, quite some time ago. It was in regards to a proposal to construct and operate a PCB incinerator up in a northern Ontario community named Kirkland Lake. And I remember the activists that were seeking to prevent that activity from taking place mentioning your name and saying that they were interested in having you come. And as I recall, you came, and eventually this project was defeated. There are no PCBs being incinerated in Kirkland Lake at this time. And then more recently, I came across your name again. I had contacted the American Public Health Association, and they recommended that I read a report that you had written as a scientific expert for the APHA. Let's talk about your background and then talk about that report.
Okay. What specifically about my background?
Well, say, just give us an idea of who you are, how you came to be this expert on the persistent organic pollutants, you know, just some basic background.
As you said, Peter Orris, and I'm a professor here at the University of Illinois School of Public Health, and I'm the chief of the Clinical Occupational Environmental Medicine Service at the Medical Center at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And I guess we first got involved in some of these persistent organic pollutants back in the early 80s when at the clinic at County Hospital, which we had an occupational medicine clinic, we began to see Vietnam vets coming back from the war talking about the problems of Agent Orange and illnesses they thought were related to dioxins, which was a contaminant of Agent Orange. And that really then tied in and out for a variety of issues over the years, not with any basic research, but rather reviewing, understanding the literature, and translating that into clinical settings. And that's really what I've done with this POPS materials over that period of time.
Okay. You were the lead, you know, the principal author. Your name is the name that is on a report. It was published in 2000 by the American Public Health Association's POPS, Persistent Organic Pollutants Project.
No, actually, let me correct you.
Okay.
It was published by the World Federation of Public Health Associations, POPS project. So this is the international body that, group that APHA, American Public Health Association, belongs to.
Okay, I better understand this now.
Mm-hmm.
And the title of this report is Persistent Organic Pollutants and Human Health, and it's dated 2000. I was particularly taken by the NFC. I've been involved with this matter of the POPs for a long, long time. And I remembered Henry Lickers. He is a scientist with the Mohawk Council of Akwesasne. He's a Mohawk person. And he stated to me that it was the signal from the diseases in the wildlife that got him focused on the POPs and then gradually became knowledgeable about the human health damages that were occurring because of POPs exposure. And then in reading your report, I noted that there was a big section on wildlife health damages and that this came prior to the recognition of the human health damages. Could you just give us a little bit of, you know, a little bit of that? You know, I understand that you are not an expert in these matters of the wildlife health effects, but if you could just give us a little on that.
Well, yes, that's absolutely where a great deal of the concern with respect to human health came from. When it began to be revealed in some of these scientific studies that there were adverse effects on wildlife and within the ecosystem in general. I think the first study came from Gillette in Florida about alligators and about a apparent feminization process that was going on with alligators where their male genitalia were consistently smaller in size and correlated with the POPs contamination in this area, lake in Florida. There were also concerns about polar bears and the same kinds of effects, and levels found in whales as well. So, this certainly was one of the target and signal effects that alerted people to the question of the mechanism of toxicity of these chemicals being endocrine disruption primarily, made them multi-organ system toxins and were cross-species toxins. So that when we saw that in a number of animal species, then people began to look at the human effects.
I see. And these adverse effects in the wildlife were seen in the Great Lakes populations of wildlife too?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there were deformities of duckbills, as I said, problems with some of the whale populations, and a series of difficulties and carcinogenic effects noted in a number of different species.
And then one other aspect of this that I found very it's riveting, truly, this matter of the adverse health effects, the diseases in the wildlife. And these are the wildlife that are top predators, you know, just as humans are top predators. The top of food chain matters.
Right. Well, now that we know that these chemicals, these are all basically chlorinated hydrocarbons, there is some involvement of the other halogens as well, bromine and others, but the primary ones that we've targeted in on are chlorinated hydrocarbons, and these are very lipophilic. They love fat, and they concentrate in animal and fish fat, and they bioconcentrate as you move up the food chain. So since humans eat at the top of the food chain, we get the most concentrated exposures to these materials. And the concentration goes up 600,000 plus times as you move from grains through the animal species.
It's very, very interesting. Now, continuing on the topic of this particular report, it was based on science that existed prior to 2000, you know,
correct,
sometime in that ballpark. It is now 2011.
Yeah.
Tell us about the recommendations that were made, you know, the decisions that were set forth as to how to address the POPs problem and the POPs and human health problem that were set forth in this report of the World Federation of Public Health Associations.
Well, this was at a time that the Stockholm Convention was being negotiated, and this was a monograph produced relevant to that so that different non-governmental organizations would have some relatively concise science with respect to the array of chemicals that were of concern in this, what is now a treaty. And we recommended that what one had to do with respect to all of them was to phase out this aspect of chemistry because there was really quite a substantial number of these chlorinated organics that were toxic, and many of the rest of them had never been tested. So we felt it was prudent to move away from the use of these chlorinated organics. And while the dioxins, the most toxic of all, are by and large an unwanted byproduct, it they are produced in the process of chlorine organic chemistry, and we felt that the substitution of alternative plastics and the substitution of alternative products was an appropriate move here, though it was clearly recognized to be a long-range goal, because there are 11,000 of these chlorinated organics in common use.
That's quite amazing. I had never heard someone, you were the first person that's actually given a ballpark figure as to how many of these POPs there are out there. I'm quite aware of a considerable number of them, but I would not have guessed that it was, in that ballpark. That's quite striking.
That's really quite a basis of much of the petroleum organic chemistry that we have, because these group of chemicals have been so attractive to the engineers. Up till about 10, perhaps 15 years ago, we had in general no appreciation that consumer products that were solid, etc., or industrial chemicals were finding their way into our bodies. It is only over the last 15 or so years that our technology has improved, so we now identify these compounds within our bodies, and we recognize that these things begin to migrate that way. So before that point, the decision-making with respect to what chemicals ought to be used and where was left up to the industrial engineers. And, for instance, polyvinyl chloride, a classic chlorinated plastic, is really a delight for the engineers, because if you put a little heavy metals into it, it becomes hard, or a variety of other additives make it hard. You get rigid bottles or telephones or a variety of other plastic things out of it. If you put phthalates into it, it becomes soft, and you can use it for bags and a variety of other things. What was never recognized at the time that they originally looked at it was that most of these additives are reactive, are toxic to people, and none of them bind well within the polymer matrix, so they all migrate out of the mixture during use. And since they're toxic, that's an additional problem related to this. So prior to this point, that's why these things have become so ubiquitous all around in terms of use. Now we know that there are toxicities related to them. We still don't have enough information on most of them, but the balance of the information we have leads us to great concerns and an urge to move away from these toxics.
Tell me, what are the human disease problems that are associated with POPs exposure?
Well, we're dealing with a whole family of chemicals. So you'll pardon me for a little vagueness with respect to the specifics. All of this is based on individual-specific testing.
Exactly.
But the generalities are, in general, most of these persistent organic pollutants, POPs, are endocrine-disrupting. Most of them are chlorinated organics. Most of them, therefore, impact on multiple organ systems in the body. The first thing is that the endocrine system is an amplification system for the body, so that a little bit of a hormone excreted or secreted by one organ in the body then migrates by the bloodstream to another organ and has a major effect impacting on the release of larger amounts of hormones, so that a very small amount of these things can have a major effect. So that's the first thing we know about them. Second thing is they affect multi-organ systems, so that there are effects by many of these chemicals with respect to sexual differentiation between males and females in developmental activities. Many of them have impacts on sperm counts and fertility and population as a whole. A number of them impact on female reproduction by bringing the age at which women begin to menstruate earlier often shortening gestation of fetuses so that the baby gets born earlier, which is increasingly a problem. You can then go on to look at a number of these with respect also to development of children, especially during pregnancy, in its neurotoxic effect. It has an effect on the brain, and it is higher organs, it is the higher functions of the brain, so that it has effect on intelligence and a variety of other brain functions when the mother is exposed during pregnancy, and as well perhaps the child in early infancy, because of course the brain continues to develop after birth. And then finally, these in general apparently are carcinogens. The dioxin has been identified as a known carcinogen, and of a number of different types of cancer in different organ systems. And the some of the other POPs as well are suspected of this.
Yes.
So that's a sweep, broad sweep of some of the effects.
Okay. And it's my understanding that there are also ways in which POPs impose increased risk of type 2 diabetes and the cardiovascular disease. Is this correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
You're absolutely correct.
Okay, let me see now. I want to make sure that we cover all this because it's very important. What advances are you aware of in the scientific knowledge that have taken place since 2000? And I mean this in this kind of big picture kind of way. I don't want to, you know, you do not need to give us fine detail of specific studies. But tell me, has the scientific literature, has the product of scientific research been such that there is more reason for concern about POPs with the new knowledge coming along since 2000, or less reason for concern about POPs?
Well, this continues to be a very controversial area. There is a lot of money riding on these scientific questions because of the amount of these chemicals that are used in society, and shifting away from them have costs involved, and staying with them have costs involved in terms of their toxicities, etc. So any kind of scientific question that has so much money riding on it usually generates a great deal of controversy. Having said that, I think it's fair to say that over the last 10 years, many of our concerns about these chemicals have been confirmed, and if not confirmed, at least strengthened in our thinking. So I would say that the evidence continues to come in, though it's difficult and controversial, concerning the need to move away from these chemicals. Having said that, one of the positive findings since the attention has been called to this within the U.S. Population, at least, is that some of these chemicals are dropping in their amounts in the background population, so that we are both modifying our purchasing, modifying our manufacturing, and producing, and therefore ingesting and incorporating in our bodies less of this, these
yes.
materials.
Yes, my understanding, I've recently interviewed Dr. Arnold J. Schechter with the University of Texas School of Public
yes,
Health
and
in Dallas.
Yes, and he's global expert in the amounts
yes.
of these materials in
and,
people's bodies.
And he was pointing out that the dioxins are going down in people's
yeah.
bodies, but at the same time, the brominated flame retardants, such as the polybrominated diphenyl ethers, that they are increasing.
Correct.
Especially in the bodies of Americans.
Yes, absolutely. So there are other chemicals as well here, as we indicated with respect to this, that we're still concerned about.
What is your perspective on, see now, and I hope this is okay, because I see the name of the radio program, I'm sure, would cause you to wonder whether there was a political aspect to this, and there certainly is, because I believe that politics are so very important, because they truly are what allows people to have some role in shaping the way their world is, because there's the physical realities of the world. But then so much of people are so powerful, people collectively are so powerful, that they can shape the world so much, and it can either be shaped in the vision of one tribe or it can be shaped in the vision of other tribes. And so in naming our radio show Environmental Revolution, we're very interested in seeing a rapid change take place on how the shaping goes. And it's our belief, it's our position, that it is unwise to allow those that created this problem to be leading the way in fixing the problem. They certainly will have a role, but they shouldn't be leading the way. There should be a huge change in the controlling entities of government so that we can have people leading, that such as yourself and such as environmental activists and people that look at this from a public health protective matter rather than a just continue to do business and making this as small a speed bump as possible. And so with that in mind, what is your perspective on the resistance of the federal government, environmental and health agencies, agencies such as EPA, such as Food and Drug Administration, such as the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, such as the National Cancer Institute, especially the National Cancer Institute? What is your perspective? And, you know, if you have no perspective on this, this is fine. But if you do have some perspective on this, we tend to almost always ask people that are involved with the POPs what they have seen and what they can relate to us about the resistance of the federal government, health and environmental agencies, to merely telling the public what the scientists, you know, what you know, what I know, what David O. Carpenter knows, what Arnold J. Schechter knows, merely sharing with the public what the scientists know about POPs and disease, and POPs and cancer in particular, with our group being Cancer Action New York.
Well, it's been certainly a mixed picture recently, and in prior years has been really moving rather slowly. I have great respect for the new administrator of the EPA. I think she's doing some very important stuff and moving ahead on a number of areas. But I must say I cannot understand in any way why the dioxin reassessment, which has been sitting on the back shelves of the EPA now for, 10 years or more.
20 years.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I cannot in any way see why that should not be released, should not be put forward as a basis for policy, et cetera. So I would hope that the EPA would move more aggressively with respect to all of these POPs, and more and specifically as well that the EPA has now articulated a good group of policy principles for the revision of the Toxic Substances Control Act, because TSCA. Is in fact up for review and renewal, and ought to be made consistent with the REACH approach in Europe, which says we want to look at the toxicity, the human toxicity of chemicals before they're put into the economy, rather than only after we've made serious mistakes like asbestos and polyvinyl chloride and some of these others.
Yes.
So that would be with the So I think it's a mixed picture over there at the EPA. They are constrained. They're constrained by the general politics. They're constrained certainly by the Congress, which has tied up and not moved ahead at all on TSCA in this last year. Not only they haven't moved ahead on TSCA, they haven't moved ahead on the emergency chemical bills as well that would seek to protect the public from dangerous you know, concentrations of toxic chemicals that might be disrupted by either a natural disaster or terrorism or one or another thing. So the Congress has been really resistant to moving ahead, and you hear calls from groups, know-nothing groups like the Tea Party and others, to rein in and stop any activity as on the part of the EPA. So having said that and understanding that that's the political context, I think the EPA is ought to be supported and pushed ahead to do more in this area. The National Institute of Environmental Health Scientists has been an outstanding governmental agency with respect to identifying the scientific basis for the toxicities of these POPs, supporting them, publishing them, and recommending policies related to these understandings. And I think Linda Birnbaum, Dr. Birnbaum, the head of the agency, ought to be well commended that this has been an agency that has resisted pressure from all sides and has done good science, supported good science, and made policy recommendations with respect to that. Broader than that, I think that the government is not moving ahead. I'm concerned that the White House is not aggressive enough in this area, although they seem to have their hands full with the Congress in a whole variety of other issues. I would hope that the public would understand that the 2012 election is critical for all of these components, for us placing public health in its proper position with respect to these decisions, and it would take just that kind of stance, because I think some of the issues that are being expressed in the Congress are to the advantage of a small group that profit from exposing the rest of us to these toxics. So having said all of that, tell me how long we're going, because I'm getting buzzed from downstairs for patients. What's cooking?
Well,
what's your perspective and time-wise?
If you are getting buzzed for patients, let's wrap this up.
You've covered all this ground.
You've done a great job of giving us your expertise and also your political perspective on this. And thank you so much, Dr. Orris.
I thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate the fact that you're highlighting these very difficult areas, and I think we need more attention to them. Thank you.
We will continue to do this work, and I'm sure you will continue, and certainly we're going to get some big changes. Sooner or later, there will be some big changes.
Great. I look forward. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Orris.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day. This has been Donald Hussig with Cancer Action News Network. You have been listening to Loving the Earth, Environmental Revolution. Dr. Peter Orris was just buzzed for he's a MD. He has patients to attend to. We're fortunate that we got nearly half an hour with Dr. Orris. He's a very busy man. He's a very important player in bringing great change. This has been Donald Hussig with Cancer Action News Network. Viva the revolution.